Welcome to the Transparency Project on the Inside Lens Network, with programming dedicated to bringing attention to unsolved homicides and suspicious deaths. If you have a question or comment for today's guest, please call in at 646-478-0982. That's 646-478-0982. My name is Denny Griffin. My co-host is Delilah Jones of ImaginePublicity.com. Hi, Delilah.
Hey, Denny. This is another one of our episodes pushing us up to the 700 episode mark on the Inside Lens Network, which has been around for quite some time, and there's all different types of programming, so there's something for everyone to listen to. Not everything is crime related, but there's a great variety of typical crime shows where we highlight cases, or like in the case of Shattered Lives, we talk about the aftermath and victim resources and things like that. And some of the podcasts that we have on the Inside Lens Network will highlight criminal cases, such as the one that we'll be talking about today, are still open investigations. But our intent is to allow the families to present information for consideration by our listeners. We don't represent our guests. We don't claim to be able to solve their cases, and we don't want to jeopardize any open investigations. So we allow our guests to present their own information, and while we might suggest some resources or some assistance, we're not liable for their subsequent actions. So this is going to be another heartbreaking story, in my opinion, and hopefully with listeners out there, maybe we can get a clue. Maybe we can get something that will give some movement to this case, Denny.
Yes, I certainly hope so, Dee. 10-year-old Holly Perenin was abducted around 12 p.m. on August 5th, 1993, while she walked with her younger brother, Zachary. The children were looking at puppies near her grandmother's cottage in Sturbridge, Massachusetts. When her brothers returned to the area to fetch their sister, all that was left was one of her shoes on the road. Despite a massive search, Holly's body wasn't found until nearly 3 months later, on October 23rd. Although there have been various persons of interest to the police, Holly's murder remains unsolved. Holly's aunt, Clara Jackman, and Sarah Stein of the Center for the Resolution of Unresolved Crime are here to discuss the case. Carla and Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Carla, let's begin with you. Can you tell us a little bit about Holly?
Sure. Yep, Holly is 10-year-old and bubbly 10-year-old, a responsible 10-year-old. She had, at the time of her death, she had an 8-year-old brother and a 5-year-old brother. And she was just a great little girl. She looked after her brothers almost in a kind of a motherly way. And, you know, we had taught her about stranger danger. And we were just so shocked when this happened. And, you know, we miss her greatly. A big boy, the allies. She was a great little girl.
Now, she was in school, correct? What grade was she in?
I think she's going to be in fifth grade.
Sixth grade. Did she ever express, you know, what she might want to be when she grew up, or was she too young for that?
No, she actually wanted to be work with the ocean, maybe be a marine biologist. She loved the water. Yeah, that was what her intent was at that age, yeah.
And what police agency is handling the investigation?
Right now it's the Hamden Police in Western Mass. Originally it was with the Worcester Police, or the Massachusetts. The Worcester County, I should say. It was the Worcester County, but transferred to Hamden County.
Okay. In the 25 years since Holly's death, the police have had various persons of interest. Has anyone been arrested in connection with her murder?
No.
No arrests?
No.
So these persons of interest didn't pan out then, huh? Apparently they were investigated, but there wasn't enough evidence to charge anyone?
Correct. You know, and the people that were, you know, people of interest back then are still people of interest now.
Yes, I would agree with that, Denny. The original persons of interest are still very much persons of interest now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Carla, before we move on to Sarah, what is the family's current relationship with the police? Do you have a good working relationship?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I think they're doing everything they can. I think more can be done. We are actually next week going to be meeting with Colonel Sherry Gilpin, getting to meet her and talk about the case with her. You know, in the beginning when they transferred the case from Worcester to Hamden, we were a little disappointed. We felt that Worcester maybe didn't share everything and or lost some information in the shuffle. But we are happy with, you know, the investigators that are on the case right now. They are communicating with us, and we meet with them periodically for updates, and they're open for, you know, communication. So we're happy, but we really need more help. Yeah.
That's great that you have that relationship, because a lot of the, in fact, I'd say the majority of the cases we profile, it's the opposite, where the family and the police agency don't have much of a relationship at all. So certainly it's can be nothing but positive, I believe, for the investigation when the family and the police
have. Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say, it takes effort to keep on top. To keep on top and keep it in the forefront. You know, we weren't happy with the way things were going, but, you know, currently we are, and, yeah, we're thankful to them.
Now, Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about the Center for the Resolution of Unresolved Crime?
Sure. The CRUC provides support to families and training to law enforcement on unresolved long-term cases.
And how and when did you become involved in Holly's case?
I've known Holly's family for a long time, but I first got involved in the investigation about a year ago.
Okay. And when you become involved in a case, be it Holly's or any case, what exactly do you do once you get involved?
Multiple things. I serve as an advocate for the family. I look into leads, and I serve as a conduit between the family and law enforcement.
Do you develop an investigative plan as well, or investigative suggestions?
Absolutely.
Now, in this particular case, as Carla said, the relationship with the police is good. Is your relationship as well? Do you deal with the police yourself as part of your involvement?
Yes, I do. You know, since Colonel Gilpin took office, we have been very encouraged because her own sister was murdered, and they just recently made an arrest in that case. And so she has particular empathy for families who are experiencing this same type of trauma. So we have been very encouraged by that.
And
yes.
Is that kind of the norm, or do you get some police agencies that are a little resentful, or generally speaking, do you get a positive reception?
I think it depends on the agency. It depends on their competency, their willingness to be transparent and be honest with these families. And if they're doing the right thing, and if they're doing everything that they can be doing. And if they're not, then certainly there's some resistance to outside involvement.
But in this particular case, that's not what's happening, that you're getting cooperation and so forth with in your dealings with the police agencies.
I certainly believe that they're doing everything that they can possibly be doing. So, you know, it's just, it's always difficult being an outsider with law enforcement. So, you know, they've been very receptive to our information and our leads, and we're, in fact, hosting another tip campaign on the anniversary of Holly's abduction this year. So hopefully that will generate the lead that we need to bring her killer to justice.
Good, good. And Carla,
yes.
you know, the family's been involved with this obviously since 1993. Would you say that overall, you say that now you are satisfied? There were apparently a couple of rough spots, but overall now you're pleased with the investigation. How tough has it been on the family over this 25-year period? First of all, how have is there ever been any inclination for the family to just kind of say it's been so long now, we're just more or less going to give up on this thing? We're not going to keep pursuing and keep trying to, you know, move the investigation forward. Has the family ever been on the verge of quitting because of the time that's gone by, or perhaps some issues with the investigation?
Well, you know, we're discouraged. It's taking this long, but we do remain hopeful. And, you know, of recent advances with DNA that's given us new help with the Ziegler case, you know, they were able to do a composite with just a very small amount of DNA. So advances like that give us hope. And having Sarah come on board, we feel like a renewed hope. We didn't really have anybody like Sarah working with us, not in a long time. So that's kind of a renewed hope.
I'm sorry, hang on. Change that phone.
we I'm at work, so I apologize for the phone ringing.
Sure.
Yeah, it's been tough. It's been a long 25 years, and you know, this anniversary coming up, 25-year anniversary. Anniversary is hitting some of us more toughly than others. You know, we've all had our issues with, you know, our kids lost their innocence when this happened 25 years ago, and they've got, you know, issues because of it, some of them. You know, some kids can grow up and somehow put this in its place and deal with it better than others, and it's like a post-traumatic thing. It's just part of our lives, you know. But we don't give up hope. We may get discouraged here and there, but we don't give up hope.
You know, I've been chastised in the past, and I think I've learned from that. When I use the term closure, I've been told by some families that there is never any such thing as closure. There might be resolution, you know, such as finding out the who, what, when, and why of things. But there's always going to be that empty place at the dinner table, or, you know, in the holidays and birthdays and anniversaries, all that type of thing.
Right.
So I guess resolution is a better thing, that there's, oh, you and your family have hope for resolution.
Yeah.
To finding out exactly who did what. Sarah.
Right. Yes.
I just want to mention also that I do have permission to call you Sarah and not Doctor. So
yes,
I don't want
absolutely.
Anyone to think I'm being. I don't want people to think I'm disrespectful.
Oh, good Lord! You're fine.
Okay, good. Is there anything going on with the investigation? Again, as Delilah said in the opening, we don't ever want to do anything that would jeopardize an investigation. But is there anything that you can share with us without jeopardizing anything as to kind of what's going on or that type of thing?
You know, we've communicated some very promising leads to the Massachusetts State Police. And as we said earlier, the original persons of interest who were named in this case are still very much active persons of interest. And so we continue to pursue those people.
Yep.
Carl,
I'm
would you
trying to
with
think.
That?
Yeah, yes, I agree. You know, there's a good handful of pretty strong suspects that just have to get the right person to speak up. Somebody knows something. Somebody's.
Do you,
you know, the other thing is,
do you think
we want to ask? Oh, go ahead.
I was just wondering, do you think in this case that the passage of time, this 25 years, may eventually be to your benefit in resolving the case, and that, you know, relationships sometimes change, you know, where somebody who might have been protecting someone 25 years ago may now not feel that way today, or that type
exactly.
of thing. I think it could actually, okay,
yeah.
good.
Yeah, I think that's a good possibility. Yeah. I do.
I would agree with that as well. I think, you know, in these long-term unresolved cases, you know, time can actually be a benefit in the sense that you just said, that relationships change, people aren't going to protect people anymore, and we have people now who are coming forward who their relationships with the persons of interest have changed. So,
yeah.
And if you get people coming forward that are willing to, you know, that were witnesses to events that took place back in 93, do you have to pretty much rely on their recollections and so forth? Because at this point, after 25 years, are you relying on that more than physical evidence? Is the memories and the eyewitness, if you will, a testimony, the primary thing?
That's a difficult question. I think we're ultimately hoping for physical evidence.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was mentioned earlier about the advancements in technology. Sarah, can you share some of the stuff that you are seeing that can help move a case like this forward?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the advances in DNA technology have been incredible. You know, now there is touch DNA, which only requires 8 skin cells to generate a complete profile, which is unbelievable. As Carla mentioned earlier, in the Ziegert case, they were able to generate a composite sketch based on DNA evidence.
And my recollection is that years ago, the amount of DNA, obviously, as I recall, required substantially more DNA. Apparently, like you say, that they can get results now with almost minuscule amounts, and that, yeah, and you know, every so often, and more actually, you hear of these cases that are 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years old, that mm-hmm. all of a sudden there's an arrest made, and you know, a few years ago, who would have thunk? You know, I mean, it just seemed impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what gives us hope. Mm-hmm.
The police contact and police relationships, Carly, you say that they update you periodically and you have meetings and are in contact. Do you have a specific investigator you deal with, or does it vary from time to time, or do you always deal with the same detective or the same investigator?
Well, they've changed over the years. I think the current one we have now has been with us for, I lose track of time. I think at least 5 years, right? Should I give you his name? I don't know.
That's entirely up to you.
Yeah.
Actually, we have a phone number if people have information.
Yeah.
They can call in.
Okay, why don't you give that to us?
Okay. It's 413-505-5993.
And this is the police department?
Yes.
Okay.
Sarah, is that the most up-to-date number? Because that looks like the number we had. Remember you had, we had the postage run?
Yeah.
I thought that was the number it was changed to?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Sorry. Just double checking.
Okay, and how about a website, or a Facebook page? Is there anything like that?
Well, Sarah has an email address.
Yeah.
And then we also have a text to tip, so people can text tech tips.
Yes. Just one. Let me get that. The email address is hopeforholly, 080593 at Gmail.
Gmail.com, yep.
Oh, that's hopeforholly, that's one word?
Yes.
Hopeforholly, and you said it was 080.
Yep, 0805-93.
@gmail.com.
Yes.
Okay, great. And
then you want to text a tip information as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Just one second.
Okay,
the text to tip. I'm just pulling it up on my computer. Hang on.
Sure. While you're looking that up, let me go back to the date of the incident again. So Holly's body was found in October.
Oh, I have
it.
I have it.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, it's crimes 274637. And
okay, why don't you repeat it?
Crimes 274-637, and anyone who is texting information should start it with Solve Holly Perenin.
Or even just Solve Holly if they don't know how to spell Perenin.
Solve Holly, yeah.
Yeah, so you text the word cleanse, which translates to 274-637.
Yeah.
That's the number you text. Yeah, and start the text with Solve Holly.
Okay, getting back to August of 93.
Yeah.
And then into October. Whereabouts was the body found? Do you know? Was it in a wooded area? Was it?
It was a wooded area off of Five Bridges Road in Brimfield.
And how close was that to where she was last seen, where the shoe was found?
It was about 5 miles.
And
yep.
Was an autopsy able to determine the cause and manner of death?
Yes, but I believe we're not at liberty to discuss that because it may jeopardize the case.
Okay, but it was able to be determined. I know sometimes with if the remains are such that various tests can't be done and they tend to be undetermined. So that's good news that they were able to find that out.
It's hard to hear. Go ahead.
Do you know after the between the time Holly went missing and the time her remains were found. Do you know what the police investigation back then consisted of? I assume maybe, I don't know if they ever, did a roadblock type thing to try to talk to people who traveled that area, and that type of thing.
They did.
They did that.
Yes,
they did.
Okay. And
it is. There was actually construction going on in Sturbridge at the time, too.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On Route 20.
So that sounds like, that's something I always look for, because if that was done, I think that's a very positive thing. You get some cases... similar to this, and that is not done. And it seems to me like you miss an opportunity to perhaps develop some leads. What do you think of that, Sarah, that technique?
Yeah, I think it's an excellent technique. I think, for the time frame when Holly went missing, child abduction investigations were not routine. And I think that they actually did a marvelous job in terms of the investigation. They took it very seriously from the beginning. And
there were so many leads.
There were very
overwhelming amounts of leads.
Yeah, I think that the primary person of interest might have gotten lost in the shuffle.
So that's why they're going back, starting from day one, reviewing everything.
You mentioned that there were, or someone mentioned that there were several different persons of interest. Do you feel like if there are multiple persons, is there a connection between them? Do you feel like it was just one person who committed this crime, or do you think there was more than one?
Carla, I'll defer to you on that. But
okay. Well, I feel like these people might be connected, but on the other hand, it could have just been one single person acting out. It's either A or B. Most of the time, I feel like it's more than one person involved. But, there is one suspect that I think could have just acted on his own. So we really won't know until we get, you know, the leads we need and people calling in and
opening
up again.
There are connections between the person of interest, but I think that's all we can say on that at the moment.
Yeah, that's how I feel most of the time, yeah, that more than one person knows it, and they're connected. They're connected in ways.
I don't want you to answer this. It might sound a little odd, but I just want to throw the question out there without you answering in any detail. Does the family, or did the family right off the bat come up with a theory of what happened? You know, no more detail than that, just kind of a yes or no. Did the family come up with what they thought had happened to Holly?
No, in the beginning, I think we were just in shock. We just couldn't imagine who could do something so horrible. We didn't have anybody in mind that would have wanted to do something like this. It's just, it was so surreal. It was just unbelievable.
Over the years, I take it now that's evolved somewhat because you know, there's been investigation. You're aware of some persons of interest or suspects. So have you now have an idea of what you think happened? Again, no details, just yes or no. Do you have a theory now on what you think happened to Holly?
Well, you know, since her remains were found and we know the cause of death, we're pretty sure we know what happened. It's just who did it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know if we'll ever understand the why it was done, but it's nice to have that person not on the street be able to do it again.
Now that you have some ideas on who may have been responsible, I'm assuming that maybe these are remain local people. At any rate, do you ever have the urge to want to confront them yourself? Do you ever just think, boy, I'd like to get this guy's face or this person's face and talk to him?
Oh, yeah.
But
all the time.
You're able to control those emotions.
Most of us,
Sarah, on...
Danny, I don't think we should be going down this line of questioning.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. As part of, I know you have the investigative plan and stuff. Are there ever any cases, not necessarily this one, but any cases you get involved with where you actually interview people yourself? I mean, where you would talk to a potential witness or suspect or whatever, or do you always
go
through the police?
No, I interview people on my own.
Do you think that there are cases where a private investigator would have a better shot at getting cooperation than maybe than a police investigator?
Yes, I absolutely believe that. I don't think these persons of interest feel as threatened. I don't think they feel as targeted as if they were being interviewed by law enforcement. And I think that outside people can assist very much in these cases.
Generally, when you approach a person that you'd like to interview, do they generally have a lot of questions? Like, obviously, they want to make sure you're not a cop, I assume. But do they have questions about what you would do with the information? In other words, if they talk to you, does it just stay with you, or do they want to know if you would pass it on to the police or that type of thing?
I've never actually gotten that question. Most of them just want to talk. They want to clear their conscience. And I think that's what is needed in Holly's case. I think someone needs to clear their conscience.
So it's a matter of finding that one person.
That
well,
one
at least
person.
To start with.
Absolutely.
I wonder, too, is what your thoughts are that if you are able to find or the police are able to find this individual that, you know, do you think a lot of times that turns into like the dam breaking or the domino effect once someone breaks and provides information?
I hope so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know,
I can't elaborate on that more. I'd love to, but I can't elaborate on that more. But
sure.
I do believe that it would be the domino effect.
I think, Sarah, you've heard me talk before about Citizens Against Homicide.
Yes.
I know one of the techniques they use. Now, they're an advocacy. They're not investigators, okay? I don't want to confuse that. But they've had success in billboards.
Yes.
By placing,
there's a billboard going up for Holly this summer.
Oh, great.
Yep.
Great.
Yep, in the Worcester area. Yeah, the Clear Channel is the company that's putting it up for no charge for us, which was really generous of them. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. That's great.
Yeah.
I remember one case in California that I heard about. This lady had, I don't know if it was Citizens Against Homicide or whether she did it on her own, but anyway, this lady whose daughter had been murdered, she put up a billboard. And after, I forget how many years it was many years, a guy finally cracked. He said that he knew who had killed the girl. And it, at the time, had been a close friend of his. So he didn't say anything. He said, but that billboard was on his route to work. And he looked at it every morning, Monday through Friday, for X number of years. He just couldn't take anymore. You know, the guilt thing.
Yeah.
That. Yep. He knew, and
that's what we're hoping
for.
Yeah,
Oh God, that's great. That's a great tool, I think, to have. You mentioned pro bono, that they're doing this pro bono, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Do you ever have anybody else reach out? I'm just wondering if I don't know, like lawyers or anybody who would. Want to provide some type of counseling or advice pro bono?
Thankfully, Sarah is offering her help to us currently. Before that, no, not really. Nobody really came up and offered. Maybe way back in the very beginning, we wanted to set up some kind of foundation, but it just didn't pan out. We did have a lawyer at that time, but that didn't pan out like we had hoped. But, yeah, it's very heartwarming when someone offers their help. Awesome.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so many people, at least in my opinion, that they don't have the resources, the financial resources to obtain the services of private investigators or attorneys. And, you know, unless they can find something pro bono, they really are denied a real good shot at some kind of resolution if they just don't have the resources on their own to pursue sue things.
Which brings us to the reward money that is still out there. That we've had a few politicians, you know, pledge money that, you know, people, we had benefits back in the beginning. So, you know, there's still a reward in this case as well. Keep in mind.
Yep, there's a $40,000 reward.
Yeah, that ought to generate a little activity, I would think.
Yeah. And back in the beginning, we also had, I think it was a different company that put up a billboard in the beginning, and another company had donated posters. I shouldn't say that a lot of people haven't done pro bono stuff, because I was forgetting about the posters and the billboards in the past.
Well, one thing we've asked several people that we've interviewed over the years, and everyone kind of has a little bit of a different answer. And what that is what does justice look like for your family? What is it that you will feel in your heart that justice has been served?
When the person or persons responsible are in jail for life. So they can't do this as any other innocent child. I know it'll be a difficult journey going, if this comes to fruition and we end up in court and having to listen to everything. It'll be really difficult, I'm sure. It'll take a toll on us. But so has been waiting 25 years, been taking a toll. So justice would be having the person off the street responsible, the person responsible.
You know, what I'm going to say next doesn't apply, I don't believe, to Holly's case, but I've been, through the Transparency Project, we've been looking at trying to get legislation passed in various states based on Illinois, what's called Molly's Law.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to me that type of reform, if you will, to the laws that are on the books in most states today regarding the statute of limitations to file wrongful death lawsuits and FOIA requests. I'm really encouraged by the Illinois. They have an appeals process there now that requires if an agency of, well, we'd be a police agency, I suppose it could be a medical examiner or coroner as well, but the agency that declines the FOIA request, if the requester appeals that decision, then the attorney general takes a look at it. And the onus under this Illinois law is on the police agency to not just be able to throw out the open case exemption for refusing to share information. They have to prove the case is active. And again, this doesn't apply here, but generally speaking, I think the legislation of that kind is very important, because it gives the survivors, the families of these victims, some extra tools, again, at this chance to get resolution. Sarah, what do you think about that, legislation?
I completely agree with you. I think legislation is the only way that any law enforcement agency or district attorney is going to be held accountable. I completely agree with you.
And it's a very tough struggle, and I'll throw that out here, that Larry Young, who's the legislation was named for his daughter, Molly, he has offered to help anyone who's interested in trying to pursue that type of legislation in their state to give them a hand with it. And I just did that a couple of weeks ago. We had a meeting with the local assemblywoman here. Yes, and it was well received. Obviously, that doesn't mean they're going to introduce the legislation in the next session, but the assemblywoman was very receptive, and I'm hoping for the best here, and I certainly will keep people informed. Another thing it does, and this part of it may apply to Holly's case, that with Molly's law, that if there is an arrest made and that individual or individuals go to trial, that the family then has 1 year from the completion of the trial, regardless of the verdict, to file a wrongful death suit. So when you think of it that way, a case that, you know, may not, there may not be an arrest made for 5, 10, or 15, or whatever number of years, that the family, the survivors, would then have the ability for 1 year at the completion of that trial, regardless of the verdict, to file a wrongful death action. So that basically makes the, you know, in effect, no statute of limitations, if you want to look at it that way, if there's an arrest and trial.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a
so
positive
those
thing.
Are all,
yeah.
Yeah, those are all good. Well, right. I didn't realize how weak the laws were in relation to helping the survivors until we started the Crime Wire and the Transparency Project and talking to, you know, victims, family after victim's family, you begin to realize that the deck almost seems to be stacked in favor of the suspect and,
mm-hmm. yep.
and not in favor.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And working, you know, working together, strength in numbers. So working together, there's always a shot at getting some changes, positive changes made.
Right.
And that's a great thing. Now, Sarah, do you have a website for your organization?
Yes, it's thecruc.com.
That's simple enough.
Yes.
Thecruc.com. And if somebody wants your services, if they go to that website, they'd be able to reach out to you through the website?
Yes, of course. We have a client contact site that they can fill out.
And then roughly if someone fills out this contact form, about how long would it take for you to have a chance to respond?
Within 24 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay. Good.
So.
So.
And my services are pro bono because I don't think that anyone should ever have to pay for something that should have never happened to them in the first place. So.
Do you share the opinion that these families are victimized twice in a lot of cases?
Oh my God, absolutely.
The loss, yeah.
They're not given the information that they should be given. They're not given the updates they should be given. They're traumatized by law enforcement a lot. And that's not acceptable. So that's why I do what I do.
Well, I want to commend you for that because, as I was saying earlier, there are so many people that can't, you know, really have a good fair shot at getting this resolution solely on their own. They simply don't have the resources, and I just wish there were more like you that, you know,
for sure.
would help.
Yeah.
It's not right. It's not right what happens to these families. And
Yeah.
It's not right.
The families are traumatized to begin with because of the death of their loved one. And they don't have experience with dealing with the police. And if the police aren't doing what they're supposed to, they don't know that they're not doing what they're supposed to. It's Yeah, like in the very beginning, we really felt very alone in the very beginning of all this happening back in 1993. And the communication we weren't really that pleased with. Like I said, things are better now, but yeah, it's so important to have someone like Sarah on your side.
Yeah.
We're just so happy that she's with us now.
You're going to make me cry.
It's true.
Have you found the media to work with? Are they interested in the story, or do they tend to not want to cover it?
Does who tend not to want to cover it? I'm sorry.
The media. Have you had good luck with the local media, you know, doing updates and so on?
Yeah, we've had good luck with media. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're, like, this August, we're going to, you know, inform them of our CHIPS campaign, and we hope to get something on the, you know, out there in the, with media land and bring more attention to the case.
The CHIPS campaign will be on August 5th. From 12 to 6 at the Sturbridge Host Inn. And we're going to have a vigil after that. So,
yeah, and I think Sarah Wright is, correct me if I'm not right, but I think media is invited from 12 to 1, right? That day, or are we going
to? I think it was 11 to 1, but either way.
Oh, okay. There'll be a certain time for them because,
Yeah.
We don't want them there the entire time.
No.
That may prevent people from wanting to come forward.
Yeah. But. So it's a completely closed event, and anyone who has information is welcome to come in on that day.
At the Sturbridge Host Hotel.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm getting a good vibes here. You know, some optimism that this case may in fact be solved. What I'd like to do, if you are willing, when there are updates, you know, any developments that are moving the case forward or possibly an actual, you know, solving of the case, I would hope that you'll let us know, and we'd love to have you back on again for an update to let people know what happened. And
sure.
We're always
absolutely
and
successful
technique. So I hope really that you would be willing to you and Sarah share with our audience and the TTP members, when you're able to do it, you know, what type of techniques you use, because we can all learn from each other. So we don't want to let success go unreported.
Right. Yeah. This could help in another case. Sure. Yeah, we definitely would keep you updated.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're having trouble with Carl. Phone.
Can you still hear me? You know what? I unplugged my charger. Plug it back in.
Kind of break your Carl. I'm not
sure what
the issue is. Sarah, do you have any comments before we wrap it up?
I would just encourage anyone, please, to come forward with the information that will help us. And I believe that we will get justice for Holly. And please just come forward. Now is the time. And Holly has never gotten the justice that she deserves, and her family deserves that, and she deserves that. And just please help us.
I would agree. Need somebody to talk.
Yeah, please.
Need the clues. Need the answers here.
Yeah, we need the answers.
Okay, well, I think the tech will, at this point. Sarah, thanks so much for sharing the Holly story with us today. And again, let us know if there are any developments in the investigation.
We
will.
Thank you.
Our next broadcast will be on July 17th, when we'll profile the 1996 murder of Jack Robinson. Please join us then.
Thank you, Denny. Thank you, Delilah.
Thank you.
Thanks to both of you for coming on today.
Thank you.